All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of In the Garden. Coming to you live from KFSK's Fall Membership Drive Week. So, you know, maybe take this opportunity out there, you garden fans who have learned a lot from the show. I always do. Every season, talking to Ed Byarsky week after week. Boy, what an opportunity to learn about the garden. So maybe during the show, take an opportunity to kind of celebrate and acknowledge that by calling on into the station and renewing your KFSK membership. Or if you're a new member, we welcome you to become a contributing member of KFSK for the first time. And it's well worth it. It's an investment in the community. And we're glad to have you in the family. And since it is in the garden, I want to thank the underwriter of this program, The Flower Farm. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. Their number is 772-3464. They grow incredible flowers all season long, and this time of year they're going to have lots of great stuff for you to get your beds ready over the winter as well. Okay. Well, we've got Ed Byarsky on the line. So let's just see how he's doing. See what his vision for the end of the season is. And this is, we're going to close the show with this episode. So we're going to stockpile you with information for the next few weeks and a couple of thoughts to keep in mind as you overwinter your garden and wait for us to return in the spring to, alongside you, bring your gardens back to life. Ed, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Oren. Of course, I don't really ever stop gardening, or, I mean, if it's actually followed the frozen snow-covered thinking about gardening, I guess. Mm-hmm. But we don't know what our weather's going to be this fall, but I've got lots of stuff that I'm planning to leave in the ground beyond, into October, maybe November. Who knows how long it goes. Some of the easy stuff like kale is growing now. This is kale that I planted back in July and August, and that's growing, and cold weather tends to make it tastier, as it certainly does with some of the other cabbage family crops. I've got cabbages, I've got some late cabbages that can stay in the ground for a while or until I need them. And there were a couple of years back, I actually shoveled snow off some of them in early December to harvest the last of my cabbages. Wow. Who knows if we're going to have to do that or not.
Wow. So these crops, these hardy cabbage family crops, the frosts from this season don't really bother them. They can just keep on going for a couple more weeks?
Right. And again, it's choosing the right varieties. So in the various gardening catalogs, they'll actually tell you that these are more hardy, maybe for fall or overwintering. And overwintering here is an iffy proposition, again, because if we don't, our winters tend to be very different from one to the next. So other good crops, though, would be Brussels sprouts. So I've got some beautiful, I haven't grown Brussels sprouts in many years, but I planted, I think, a dozen or so of them, and they are magnificent. I mean, there's little Brussels on them already that are of a size to be harvested, but they, too, are extremely hardy, and you can gradually pull off the lower leaves and snap off the little, they're like miniature, very tiny cabbages, and snap those off, and you can steam them, you can boil them, you can saute them, you can roast them, do all sorts of stuff with them. And again, being nice and fresh compared to those from the grocery store, the flavors are better, and they get better again with the cold temperatures. My broccoli, I may have a little bit of broccoli left, some of the side shoots. I planted some that are small plants. Doesn't look like they're going to make it, but we'll see what happens with those. Right. Carrots.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I've just got to comment that that's the most tempted I have ever been in my life to grow Brussels sprouts. Like, that's just an incredible enticement. And you're so right that the sweetness in the cold weather is just all the more reason.
Absolutely. So again, I should have. Again, I'm practicing each year. I try some different stuff at different times for planting. This year, I didn't plant it. I planted peas and some of the broccoli, spinach, and Swiss chard, cilantro, and lettuce, all about the same time, all around August 7th, in a bed that I had pulled out the garlic from a week before. So now the peas are looking good. They're a foot to a foot and a half tall. I don't know if they're going to get to the point where they're going to flower and give me peas. But depends on what October looks like for the rest of the month. Now, the lettuce in there is ready for eating. We've been eating. The Swiss chard is a foot tall. We're eating that. The spinach already went to bolt. I've harvested all of that stuff. So we ate it. I'm going to plant some more spinach here shortly. And that will then overwinter and be ready in next April for eating. The cilantro, I just harvested a whole bunch of that to take to one of my local retailers, along with some parsley. That is just magnificent stuff. And then there's even a couple of other, and I planted some broccoli. That's looking doubtful. But if nothing else, I can eat the broccoli plants. They'll get, you know, chopped up into my soup or into our salads, whichever. And that part's fine. So, again, you know, these are late crops, and, again, it's timing. So next year, if my peas don't do it, that's probably going to tell me that I should have planted them a week or 2 weeks earlier than I did. Same thing with the broccoli.
So how late can you let these rock out in the garden? Is it just a matter of until you've eaten them all, or how long are they going to hold on for you?
That's weather dependent. So some of these are inside a small hoop house that I have. So they're at least I'm still in control of the moisture. That's a good thing. So, I mean, and that means they're also a few degrees warmer than those that are out open and exposed in the open garden. Now, I've got some more of this lettuce that I planted. That's beautiful. There was some red and green butterhead lettuce. Found out that the porcupines, I noticed that the porcupines have found it. So there's going to be some porcupine removal efforts going on this weekend, I hope, because I'm not really big on sharing with the porcupines. So then the other thing that really improves flavor-wise with cooler temperatures are the carrots and parsnips. I mean, parsnips are one. Those can stay in the ground through the winter. They can freeze and thaw with minimal protection. And then as soon as the ground thaws in the springtime, get them up and out of the ground. And they are so sweet and delicious and one of the first crops you can have. Carrots cannot freeze and thaw over multiple times. You will lose them. But they definitely get better. So I pull a few carrots whenever I need to eat them, but I try to leave them in there just as long as possible until the ground is about to freeze and then get them out because they do get incredibly sweet. So, again, it's all about timing and what you get away with. I may very well throw either plastic or a tarp over the carrots to leave them there longer. Beets are another one. And, again, they, too, will get sweeter. You know, the other challenge, though, is if you've got much for mice and voles or even rats, much I hate to say it. I remember them in Petersburg when I was gardening at some other folks' house, that there were some sort of rodents, anyway, were eating potatoes underneath the black plastic. And I'd find chewed up potatoes with piles of mouse or rat droppings, which was not pleasing.
Outrageous.
So, and voles, we have voles, which are wild critters, mouse, you know, large mouse-sized critters, and they love beets. And I've seen them where they literally hollow out a beet in the ground. So, again, that may affect your how long you would leave these in the ground if you know that you have had a problem with them in the past.
Would you say that those particular mammalian pests, they become more of a hazard the later in the fall you run it?
Oh, sure. I mean, they're hungry, and, of course, they are looking for some food, and this is a rich source of a carbohydrate-rich food, beets and carrots. You know, they'll eat both of those. And, well, I mean, even bears will do the same thing. You know, we've had problems with that, where the bears will come in and pull up carrots and eat the carrots in a garden bed. And they're pretty darn good at doing it, too. unfortunately. Although a little messy eaters where you may see carrot chips kind of scattered about the garden. But it can be a problem if you, and this year, I don't know about your name down in Petersburg, but again, the bears are very active in Juneau, and we're having bears up in the mountain ash trees eating mountain ash berries because there's not much fish in the creeks because of the low water levels.
Right, right.
So, again, that's an issue with what we can leave in the ground or until they find it, or hopefully we harvest it before they find it. Or they find a few of them and leave them for us, and that tells us we better get them all out of the ground now.
Right. Okay. So, wow, those are such interesting timing considerations. Like, obviously, there is a big difference between carrots and beets that have been able to stay longer and sweeten their sugars versus those that are harvested while it's, you know, substantially warmer. But those are...
I mean, yeah. You know, you can certainly, depending on when you plant, and that's something, too, you can affect how late you can leave some of these in, root crops particularly, you know, and they're affected by when did you plant them in the spring or early summer. You know, so if you're thinking ahead, you know, if you were thinking ahead, or are you going to be thinking ahead for next year, you know, okay, you think, well, I'm going to get some of my carrots in the ground just as soon as possible, end of April, whenever the ground starts to warm up. But and then I'm going to be eating more of those in the late summer and into the early fall. But then I want a later variety or maybe the same variety, but plant them a month to a month and a half later. So, again, those will be maturing later in the season for storage. And, again, then, of course, you got to plan on storage. Do you have a root cellar? Do you have a cool crawl space? Do you have a spare refrigerator in your garage? And I mean, I've used all of these depending on where I am. Now I have both a root cellar and the spare garage fridge. So just this past weekend, we ate the last of our carrots from last year.
No, that's awesome.
And I still have some potatoes from last year that we are finishing off.
So
again, these are in the garage refrigerator. So, I mean, from the root cellar, I had to de-sprout some of those potatoes in May and put them in the fridge to keep lasting longer. I hate buying potatoes from the store and carrots, too. You know, so I work really hard at storing those.
I love it. That's really cool. And I think that's a fascinating thing that I would, I'm going to take that on as a challenge. And I hope people out there do the same thing of plant two different plantings of your carrots so you can get a long growing season and eating them over the summer. So you're the first opportunity to plant, you plant them, but then plant a second wave that can mature in the cold, and then you can really kind of explore that difference in flavor between the season.
Yeah, carrots are a prime one. I mean, a carrot harvested in August is going to taste completely different than a carrot harvested in October. I mean, it's amazing. I'm sure somebody's done the testing on the sugar content and all of that. Another good plant that I will leave in as long as possible, just eating what I want, are leeks. And leeks can, I mean, right now I've got some huge, I think my best leeks ever, nice big 2-inch diameter. Most, again, some are hardier than others. Look at the seed catalogs. And, of course, those catalogs will have both days to maturity. So there may be 80-day leeks and there may be 120-day leeks. So you could actually plant both of those at the same time, knowing that some of these are going to mature before the others. And again, just like we kind of mentioned with cabbages. So we had some cabbages that we harvested at the end of August. They were fully mature and big. And in fact, we got quite a bit of rain in August, and some of them started to crack because they were mature. But again, I've got some other beautiful cabbages that are growing side by side with those early ones. And so I can harvest them now. I can harvest them in November, I suspect, and perhaps into December, again, depending on what our winter is going to be like, early winter will be like.
Yeah. Wow. Leeks. Okay, cool. I love it. Well, so that's a good kind of overview of plants that we can leave, in the ground for the next few weeks. I mean, so this was our last show of the season, but it, like you said right off the beginning, this doesn't mean the garden season is totally over. There are kind of special crops that are going to keep on yielding for you, and it's something that you can start even planning for next year in your selection of the crops that you're going to be putting in and staggering their readiness and their maturation times.
And that's really where the record keeping comes into play. I mean, again, I may harp on it. I just got my Medicare card, which tells you how old I am. So, which also means that my memory is really going downhill. So, but I'm trying to do better at my record keeping. And as I'm doing more and more of these different, I'm building new garden boxes, I actually painted numbers. Last year, I started painting numbers on the garden boxes. And boy, that is really helping in my record keeping, rather than describing, well, it's the third box up from the apple tree on the right side of the driveway, or it's the fifth box below the greenhouse, or whichever. You know, so all of that in the record keeping really makes a difference, so you know the variety that you planted last year, and this was the great variety, you want to find it again, or it, and when it matured, and or when it was, you harvested and it didn't have much flavor at all, and I don't think I'm going to grow that one again next year. So I got to look for some new varieties that are tastier, hardier, last longer, or mature earlier.
Yeah, I don't think we can harp on that enough. It's just not possible because it's the kind of thing that, you know, makes a lot of sense that people would sort of find reasons to never get around to doing real planning and record keeping that way. But I can guarantee, I feel like, that anybody who takes that on as a regular practice in their garden is going to see a tremendous improvement in the quality of the crops that they're growing and the yields. It bears fruit that way. It's really worth the effort.
Yes, certainly does. So all of that, I suppose, can lead us to, doing our garden cleanup now. So at least some of those beds we know we're going to leave in there for a while and until they're ready for harvest. Some of the stuff, if you've got your broccoli, I mean, I pulled out all my cauliflowers. So I had cauliflowers and broccoli in the same boxes with the Brussels sprouts. So I pulled out the cauliflowers first. We've been eating the broccoli. It's about ready to come out. So what that does, it leaves more space now for the Brussels sprouts to continue to grow. And I want to get the other stuff out of there to try to remove the slug habitat. So some of the early lettuce that I planted that bolted, that's come out. I don't need to get rid of that. I just over the past weekend pulled all of my beans, the green beans and purple beans from one of my hoop houses. We got one, we stripped off the last few beans in there, got a nice meal out of them. So they went into the compost pile covered with some horse manure. And my cucumbers, I've pulled all of those out of the greenhouse, along with all but one zucchini, and I've got one winter squash that's got one big squash hanging on it. I've got four of them in the house on my stairs, and they're beautiful orange. They're called, certainly I can recommend this one for somebody to try if they find the seeds. It's called Yushiki Kuri. Maybe I'm pronouncing that right. Yushiki. Kuri, Kuri. It's a small orange, fine-grained, tasty, sweet squash. Grew them in the greenhouse. I got one last year. I got five this year. So I figure that's something really great to look toward gradually eating them this winter.
Ooh, yeah.
And then that will come out too. Now at the same time, I've on the other side of the greenhouse. I've still got tomatoes ripening, all the tomatoes we can eat. So they're going to stay there for a while longer too. But as we get them harvested, out they will come. So do your greenhouse cleanup. If you've got some, and maybe plant some of the spinach in the greenhouse for next early spring harvest.
You know, a thought just crossed my mind about those Yushiki Kuri ones, because I really want to try those now that you've mentioned it. Is that something you got out of a seed catalog, or are you going to save seeds for those? Or what's
Well, both, yeah. So last year, I got one I got one to mature, and it was it was the best squash I've ever had. I mean, I like butternut squash as far as a comparison goes. This was sweeter. This was better than that.
I need that.
And it's interesting because the grocery store right now actually has a few of these in their, they've got their mixed squashes that you can buy. And they have some of those, and they, you know, they've got stickers on them with the names on them. So I did save seed, although I did use some of the initial seed I replanted from them. What I found interesting this year is that I had three separate plants in my greenhouse. Each one of them made different-looking squash, which tells me that the hybridization has happened there, which is really common with squash. But I did try to, I was hand pollinating these squash to help them along to try to make sure they would set fruit. So again, if I save seeds from these and replant them next year, hard to say what I am going to get, whether I'll get a different looking squash is what I suspect. Hmm. You know, so they're irregular, shall we say. And I don't have any other kinds of squash to plant. And my cucumbers aren't going to pollinate the squash. And usually zucchinis will not pollinate winter squash either, because they're kind of different group of squash.
Hmm. Okay.
So those are something that's happening there. But, you know, out in the garden, the open gardens, the cleanup is going on as we go, and then kind of like we talked about last week with preparing the garden, mixing in the compost, and getting it covered for the winter, that's definitely worthwhile doing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so preparing beds while you're doing your cleanup. Yeah, what's a good little, like, checklist for people to just run through in their minds as they're looking out at their outdoor garden beds, thinking like, okay, what do I need to do? What should be my order of operations here?
Well, pull out the old stuff first. Get rid of it. If the material wasn't infested with root maggots, like for the cabbage family crops, potentially you can throw that in the compost. All the potato vines I do not compost. Those are separate. They either go in the burn pile or over the edge or off to the dump. I do not throw those in a compost because I don't want to get reinfest with stuff from those. But any of the cabbage tops, or broccoli tops, should be fine without any pests. I'm killing slugs as I go, because this time of year, we are likely, as we pull stuff up, we're likely to find slugs in that old foliage, or we may even find slug eggs in around the edges of the garden boxes and beds. And so, you know, squish those little tiny little pearls is what they look like. So as to hopefully keep the numbers down a bit toward next year. So that's worthwhile. Yeah. Mixing in the compost, and whether it's partially composted, isn't fully done, mix that into the soil and then cover it over, get your seaweed, throw that on. So all of that is good basic stuff so you're more ready for next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there's some of the other plants that we want to save over the winter. Hmm. That might include begonias and dahlias, which have tuberous roots that we will want to save. And then we might talk a little bit about fuchsias also. So at least for both begonias and dahlias, once they're frosted, usually the plants will die back. With the begonias are a little hardier than dahlias. I mean, they're both semi-tropical plants. So it doesn't take much frost to knock them down. So then we'll cut off the tops, cut the stems off the dahlias, cut them down to maybe 2 or 3 inches tall, dig them up gently, wash off the roots and clean off the roots, label them, assuming that you're going to be keeping a bunch of these for next year, label what colors they are, and then pack those away. You can pack them into fairly dry shredded paper in bags or boxes, or in a dry sawdust. Some folks will even use the not kitty litter, but the wood shavings
that
are sometimes used in, like in litter boxes and that sort of thing.
Like pet shavings.
Yeah, pet shaving. Okay. And so that can work also because they will insulate these and we'll store these along with our begonia tubers in a warmer place than we would keep our potatoes. Mm-hmm. So we want to keep these in a place that's going to be in the 40 to 50 degree range, a little warmer, again, because they are a semi-tropical plant. So again, with the begonias, you normally just snap the stems off the top of the tubers. Again, gently dig them up out of the pots, and you can dry them up. And again, I'll usually put those into paper bags with labels. So if you get paper lunch bags and you have, whether it be your different kind, your varieties, you can either label the outside of the bags, or if you've got tags that were in the pots with the plants, again, you can toss those in with them.
And are you, with the begonias, are you kind of rinsing those the same way you would a dahlia?
No, I don't. You know, I don't usually rinse them. What I'll actually usually do with those, I'll dig them up and gently pull some of the soil off them. There's still roots attached to these. Uh-huh. So I'll tend to, I'll have open cardboard boxes, cardboard trays, or planting trays, and I'll actually dry them out somewhat, kind of like we talked about curing. This applies to curing potatoes. Well, we kind of do the same thing with curing dahlias and begonia tubers so that their skins toughen up. Then we can remove the soil from the begonia tubers more easily. Mm. And again, that may also be a time when you all of a sudden you see from you've got, you know, one clump of dahlias coming out of a big tub, and all of a sudden you've got enough dahlias for your neighborhood. So you can either split them up now and give them away, or plan towards splitting them in late winter, early spring if you're, for those folks who may be growing dahlias for sale, like our sponsors.
Right.
That's what they do. They would be good if they're around. We've had a fellow in Juneau basically do a workshop on exactly that. How do you deal with, dividing your dahlias and getting them started in the springtime?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating procedure that I myself have never done, but I find it really interesting to consider. It's intimidating having not done it. I mean, I feel like, oh, I'm just going to destroy this thing.
Right. Well, and that's where, a lot of folks may just buy them new each year. But again, if you start with, especially with begonias, that tuber gets bigger and bigger and bigger each year. And it definitely gives you bigger stems, more flowers in years following. With dahlias, you're actually splitting dahlias down because they'll have a cluster of these tubers that look kind of like sweet potatoes. Mm. Those can be split down to individual tubers with a little piece of stem on them. And you've got to be careful about that because if they break loose down below the soil surface, those generally won't sprout. So you need to be kind of careful with how you divide them. Gotcha. And then going to something like our fuchsias, if you've got, again, if you have that cool space to put them, like in a root cellar or in a crawl space, those you can take and usually clip the top, leave about 4 to 6 inches of stems on them, cut them back, remove leaves. The problem with those, if you don't remove all the leaves and stuff, sometimes you can have an issue with aphids surviving on the leaves and on the stems. So it can even be worth a little soap spray on those. They stay in the pots. So you don't pull them out of the pots. You don't remove the soil from those. And then you have to, wherever you put them, if that's in your crawl space, you've got to get down there a couple times during the winter probably and check to make sure they don't completely dry out or they will die.
Oh.
Where the begonias and the dahlias, they can get dry, no problem. Fuchsias may need to have a little watering. And then, again, timing as far as when to bring them out into the light and get them restarted in pots with a little bit of liquid fertilizer to start with is next. Mm-hmm. Well, February, March, April, depending on which of these we're talking about.
Right. And so are you saying that fuchsias, want to be a little bit colder than where you're going to be storing the begonias?
Yes, that's right. So, yeah, we talked about storing potatoes or carrots or something like that in tubs or totes in the root cellar or in the crawl space. As long as they don't freeze, the fuchsias can go into the same place. Okay. So, yeah, the dahlias and begonias want to be warmer.
Gotcha. Yep. Cool. Well, that's great information for how to extend the life of these awesome perennials that are really, like you said, begonias, for example, they really do just get better and better year after year if their survival is good. So it's worth the, it's almost a relationship. I can think of one person who has incredible begonias in Petersburg, and I don't know how many years they've been keeping them going, but they take pride in the longevity of their begonia.
Yeah, it really, I mean, we start out with, you can buy the begonia tubers, and actually you can buy, a lot of folks buy them as annuals, little in just a little 3.5-inch pot in the springtime. But they'll form a small tuber the first year, and then each year they get bigger and bigger. And I have seen, I've stored some of my own, some they could be a 1 pound or more, or even 2 pound tubers, which are almost the size of dinner plates. So again, tremendous. They are dividable, though I have not done that. There's some techniques there that you can ever so carefully split and treat them with a fungicide, among other things. I have not done that. But certainly I can see the difference, and of course that means you need a bigger and bigger pot for them each year, too.
Okay. So you're saying like dahlias, you can split pretty naturally, but begonias, you haven't really gotten into splitting those.
That's right. So we've got a beautiful display of begonias right now. They're blooming beautifully, and they'll go until, well, pretty hard frost. So sometimes that it might be November. So we'll see what Mother Nature allows us.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, gosh, great topics. And so are there any other kind of closing thoughts we want to leave people with as we're wishing them well into the winter?
Oh, I'd say look out at your garden and dream about next year. Dream about what, are we going to try something new? Are we going to try to grow everything better? Hopefully your drainage is good. So if you've got some soil improvement to do, get out there and work some more sand in, work on the drainage, plan for a greenhouse or a hoop house so that we can control the moisture and push things to grow faster, taller, bigger, better, sweeter, whatever.
Hmm. Yes.
It's time for dreaming.
Yeah, that's right. And I like that idea of looking out at the garden. You know, maybe if you're not out there working hard in it, nose inches from the plants, and you're looking at it from the window, you can see it in a different way even. And maybe, like you say, see drainage trouble spots and start seeing where you're going to build that greenhouse or hoop house.
And also even look at your trees, look at the neighbor's trees, and is there some pruning needed to let more sunshine in? Or you may not be doing the pruning right now. I mean, you can do that during the winter. If you offer to, maybe the neighbor's trees are shading your yard, maybe you can, if you're good neighbors, you can offer to pay for the pruning of those trees or whatever to let more sun into your yard so you can grow better too.
Yeah, a win-win.
And or look at some folks who might have some good ground that isn't being used right now. Maybe work out some sort of a sharecropping arrangement. If their ground is better than your ground, they have more sunshine there. Well, maybe ask if we could grow some of the sweet corn and whatever else over there on their property and share it with them. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes good sense. That's a lovely idea. And it just gets those conversations going about just sharing with gardening and sharing go hand in hand, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I guess that's a good enough place to leave it off. It's hard to end a season. I just love in the garden. But we'll be back. We'll be back, everyone. And if people, you know, if they think of big pressing questions during their cleanup phase or anything else, just like you would keeping notes in the garden, make a note of that question and check in with us once the show's back on. Stay involved. It's a great opportunity to get some personalized expertise. And so hopefully people, you know, when a question crosses your mind, write it down. And with that, we'll just say thank you to Ed and wish you well.
All right. You're welcome, Oren, and hopefully you have the winter that you want, whatever that may be.
I love it. Okay. Well, till then.
All right. We'll see you in the spring.
All right.
Bye.
Oh, in the garden. Ain't nothing in the world that I think we're going to miss it. Thursday afternoons aren't going to be the same till spring comes. It's something to look forward to. I mean, you know, we're considering winter, you know, while we're during this program. But, of course, we're not in winter yet. Fall just really started. But there's still lots of work to be done. And, yeah, we just really appreciate Ed Bajarski taking the time to share his expertise with us and looking forward to getting the conversation going again in the spring. And for all of you out there, well, happy gardening, you know. If you find yourself missing this program too much, well, our website has a pretty incredible archive. I think it may be every episode of In the Garden is available on kfsk.org with a little description of what the topic was and the date. And so, you know, over our off-season here, you can check it out. And, you know, KFSK's whole website is really a powerful archive, an incredible news archive for this community, because we've got absolutely top-notch journalists working every single day here to tell the story of life in Petersburg. And their stories can be searched through our website and all that. You know, the volunteer shows can be streamed again from recent weeks. And yeah, we put a lot of work into that website. And so we hope you enjoy it. And with that, a little reminder that this is the fall drive. So feel free to drop on by the station and make your pledge. Collect your beautiful member drive swag. We've got beautiful mugs and t-shirts and trucker caps this year, something new. And or you can call in, same thing, 772-3808. We'd love to hear from you. We love celebrating community this week, and we do you know, depend on everybody placing a value on community radio in Petersburg, because we're public. We're yours, you know. It's public radio, and we only exist because of the show support from this community. All right. All the very best to you, and In the Garden, we'll be back in the spring.